As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Late night, midnight on the interstate. I didn't feel so great until I saw the city.
Welcome back to Straight from the Source, Mike Russo. Thanks as always for tuning in, for listening, for downloading wherever you get your podcasts. Really appreciate it. Coming to you from one of my favorite road cities, Calgary. Been here for many eons, coming back to this awesome city. It's just a beautiful downtown. And I know we're in a day and age of brand new, flashy arenas and all the frills that come into new arenas. And frankly, XL Energy Center is one that needs a little bit of a facelift in terms of those frills. And again, I know I'm not a paying customer, and I know that I'm not an owner that needs a bunch of revenue streams. So I'm a little warped on probably what the priorities are for arenas, but as anybody that listens to me knows, the Saddle Dome is just one of my favorite arenas. I know even sports writers don't exactly love it because the press box shakes and there's no bathroom in the press box. You have to go into the stands and you got to climb a bunch of stairs to get there, but it's just one of my favorite arenas. It's just so unique. You're level with the flames, and you get to look right down onto the benches, and the sight lines are awesome. But maybe I'm just a sicko because I used to love Rexall Place in Edmonton, which had more stairs and was a bigger pain to get up to and get to the bathroom. But the sight lines there were incredible as well. My guest today is Wes Walls. Speaking of Calgary, he is a Calgary native. In fact, my first ever Father Son sit down that I did with the Star Tribune way back, I think back in 2007, Frank Walls, Wes's dad, was part of that sit down. So really appreciate Wes joining the podcast in a city where he's got 1,000 other better things to do than join me on a podcast. And we're going to be talking to Wes about what he was seeing from the penalty kill before Dean Evason and Bob Woods were let go, and what he's seeing from them now as the team is 1-3 in a row and is 10 of 11 on the kill. And just what the difference that he is seeing. You know, again, in his wild career, he was never part of a coaching change, but he recognizes exactly what differences tactically, strategically, systematically, that you see on the ice. And we'll talk to him about what he's seeing under the new John Hines regime, or if this is just the spark that you would normally get with a coaching change. I will talk to him about broadcasting, and I'm going to talk to him about the Vancouver Canucks and the job that his old pal Rick Tocchet has done behind that bench. They are outstanding this year. Pettersson, Miller, Hughes, Besser, all playing great for them. And Rick Tocchet, remember, was the head coach in Tampa Bay when Wes Walls was on his bench as an assistant. So he knows Rick Tocchet better than most. So we'll talk to Wes about that. But let's talk about this team right now. John Hines, 3-0, is the Wild coach. What a difference a week makes. A week ago, this looked like an awful team. I was basically petitioning for them to embrace the suck and go for Cole Eiserman or Macklin Celebrini and go get a top pick for the first time. Maybe, look, I mean, it's not like everything is cured, and they're still got a lot of work to get consistently back into the playoff. But man, they look like a completely different team than the one that lost 7 in a row before Dean lost his job. They're playing fast hockey again. They're looking like the team that we saw the last couple of years in the regular season, at least. And so, you know, they're getting great goaltending. It starts there under Dean Evason. This goaltending duo was just near the bottom of the league in save percentage. Was about 868 when Dean lost his job, which was third worst in the league. Now they're at 960 something in three games, and not just Philip Gustafson getting the first two games where the Wild were impeccable defensively, but then Fleury comes in against Chicago and makes 27 saves there. So they're 3-0 again under John Hines. They're getting great blue line play. Jake Middleton's playing his best hockey this season. Spurgeon's playing his best hockey since he returned from the upper body injury. Faber and Brodin have been outstanding there. And then up and down the lineup, you look at their forwards right now. That line the other night with Rossi, Zuccarello, and Kaprizov was generating just scoring chance after scoring chance. How about Matt Zuccarello this year at 36 years old? He's leading the team in scoring. He's on pace for 97 points. He's got a point in every single home game, which is 11 straight. He's got a point in 9 games in a row overall. He's got an assist in 7 games in a row overall, which is a career high, and just looking like he's getting better with age. Kaprizov looked great the other night with Rossi getting his first 2-goal game in his career. And then you look at that second line. Eriksson-Ek has just been a beast all year. Boldy has goals in his last 2 home games. They still need to get Johansson going somehow. Third line, you know, Goudreau has just done a great, great job stepping back into the lineup, and Maroon has played really well since he got onto that line, which is one reason why Ryan Hartman got back from suspension the other night and started off in the fourth line. And then Foligno has sneakily been one of the best defensive forwards in the league this year and shut down forwards, even though he hasn't scored a bunch of goals. Fourth line's playing great with Dewey and Dewey. And then Ryan Hartman stepped in the other day. Ryan's just going to have to be patient right now. You know, again, he gets suspended at a time where he misses the first 2 games under a new head coach. They win those 2 games. Maroon played really well with Goudreau and Foligno, so John Hines didn't want to make the change there. And so now Ryan has to start in the fourth line and just bide his time, and eventually he'll probably be elevated in the lineup, whether it's performance or an injury or something like that. But right now he's just got to, you know, be patient and play his butt off to try to get into the good graces of the new coach. And I thought he played really well the other night in limited time, although the way that game unveiled itself the other night, Don Hines was pretty much able to roll 4 lines at even strength. So really good job so far for the Wild. Hines, it's in a really interesting when you have a coaching change and just the difference between coaches. Not that one way is better or not, but this is just a different message. It's a different coach speaking to the media and the fans on an every night basis, different terminology, different tactics in the way that he talks. And it's just, you know, every coaching change that I've ever covered, you just learn more and more about the game just by listening to somebody and just the way that they speak. And John Hines, you could tell, as a career coach, I mentioned this on a podcast last week, he's just so comfortable in his own skin. You could just tell that he has done this many, many times before. Just the way that he talked to the media at his opening press conference, the way he addressed the team and that we've been able to see on social media, you could just tell that he's super confident in his abilities. And I'm going to be sitting down with him in Vancouver for a really cool story on just how he got a start in his pro coaching career. It's an unbelievable story that was told to me, and I can't wait to get his version for it. In the minors right now, Jesper Wallstedt. That's apparent. Wallstedt is how he pronounced it on to the Wild in training camp. So Wallstedt. So it's going to be hard to just say that. I'd rather just say Wallstedt, but we'll be respectful. Second week this season, he was AHL Player of the Week. He had a back-to-back 43 save efforts last week against the Colorado Eagles in Colorado. On back-to-back nights, just superb, leading the league in the AHL in save percentage. And man, the Wild got something special there when they moved up and drafted him. I made that trade with the Edmonton Oilers to go grab him. And man, Oilers fans are little ticked at that move right now. I'm trying to think what else to talk about. Faber and Rossi starting to get some Calder love, outshone Connor Bedard the other night. Not saying that they should get the Calder over him, but they are starting to get their love. If you didn't read, Dom Lecision did a really good breakdown of the Calder in The Athletic the other day. The other big news is that the Wild are going to have a bunch of guys that they expect to be in World Juniors, but Charlie Strammel, after making the World Juniors in his first 2 years, as a 17 and 18 year old, as a 19 year old, his struggles at Wisconsin has cost him. He's not even being invited to camp. So, you know, there have been a lot of great, great NHL players that at one point or another either wasn't invited to camp or didn't make a team. We saw it here in Minnesota, Alex Tuch, Matt Dumba, his third year, I believe, didn't make it. Matt Boldy. I mean, it just, and all throughout the league. But this is a little concerning, just the way that he's playing this year and just the lack of ice time that he's getting. He's also dealing with an injury at Wisconsin. So we'll have to keep an eye on that and see if anything comes together later in the season, or if he even figure out a way maybe to get him out of Wisconsin after this year. Who knows? But again, without further ado, here is Wes Walls.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Really happy to be joined by Wes Walls here in Calgary before the Wild play the Flames. And Calgary is your town. You got to see your family yesterday. This is where you're from. This is where little Wes Walls was running around.
Yeah, and it was funny. Always nice to come back to Calgary. I don't get a chance to see my mom and dad very often anymore. We have a lake place out in British Columbia, not far from Vancouver, that my mom and dad come out and visit during the summer for a week every year. And they don't really love to fly, so I don't see my mom and dad very often. So when I saw on the schedule that I was on this trip out here out west, I put my order in for my meal last night, and my mom had dinner ready at 6 o'clock. My mom and dad are both German, and it was a nice pierogi dinner that we had growing up. And it was just taking the Uber through Northeast Calgary. It's a lot of things are different in the city of Calgary than they were for me growing up, but it's always interesting just driving past the schools that I went to, and I can still look over and see some of the swing sets on the parks that I used to swing on. A lot of it still looks the same, but so yeah, I had a lot of great memories here in Calgary. Scored my first ever goal in Calgary when I played for the Boston Bruins, chance to play for the Flames.
Yeah. What was that like as a Calgarian to play for this team?
Yeah, it was, I found out I had a lot of more fourth and fifth cousins that I didn't know that I had. You got a lot more phone calls and for tickets and things like that, but it was amazing playing in my hometown for a couple years. I grew up a huge Calgary Flames fan, and I was the boy that was my room was in the basement. I was the boy with the transistor radio when I was told to go to bed, and I'd have my radio under my pillow so my mom and dad didn't know I had my radio, and I'd be listening to Peter Marr call the
legend.
The Flames games, and I probably listened to many of those North Star playoff games in the 90, 81, around that time when I would have been 10 years old. So a lot of fond memories playing here in Calgary. Playing for the Flames was truly remarkable, and had some great times. I had one really solid season there playing with German Titov and Robert Reichel, and then the 1 year in the playoffs, I just it was amazing how one playoff or one game or one situation can just change the outlook of your whole career. We were my second year there. I didn't start the playoffs. We played the Vancouver Canucks in the first round. And that was the year in 94 that they went to the finals against the New York Rangers and lost. And we were up 3-1. And Michael Nylander didn't play very well in game one. And I was a healthy scratch for game one. Michael Nylander came out of the lineup. And I went into the lineup and got a chance to play. And then in game two, we ended up winning that game. And then in game two, Joe Nieuwendyk and Joel Otto both got hurt.
Oh, wow.
So Michael drew back in. I stayed in the lineup. I was playing like every third shift, and you know, I was playing a lot more than I was during the regular season. And we were up 3-1. We had I had actually scored 3 goals in the 4 games that I had played, and you know, pretty big goals too. We had a two on one in game 7 before Pavel Bure scored on that breakaway that we would have won that series, and who knows what, you know, if my life would have changed, because
right.
I kind of would have probably been a bit of a hero. The guys went down, we ended up beating Vancouver, and we ended up losing that series, and then I never even signed that summer, and so I ended up signing in Detroit. So it's amazing how things can change in a moment.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I had a great experience here in Calgary as a player growing up, and
That was that great Canucks run to the Rangers series.
Yeah,
the last time the Rangers won.
So I've had some success in down 3-1, yeah. But I've been on the other side of that one too.
Yeah, no doubt. I can't imagine also your first, like, you listen to Peter Marr growing up, and then your first goal with the Flames, getting to hear that highlight of him calling you. Scoring a goal, it had to be one of those surreal moments.
Yeah, it really was. And I Ed Whalen was calling the games for the Flames.
Uh-huh.
I don't even remember the call and what it was all about, but just having a chance to score in your own building where you kind of grew up was truly remarkable. And Ed Whalen was a God rest his soul too.
Yeah.
He's gone too. He was around here a long, long time, and did Calgary Stampede Wrestling. I mean, that guy did everything. But yeah, no, pretty neat.
And Will and press box. Yeah. Yep. Peter was a good friend. He just had one of those, eclectic calls, and just iconic calls.
Yep.
So you played, 438 games for the Wild, still the franchise leader in shorthanded goals, probably never be broken with 14. You've seen it all with this organization. You're never part of a coaching change in this organization. You were lucky enough to have Jacques your entire career, but you've seen coaching changes being around here. What are the biggest differences that you're seeing right now with this team compared to even just a week ago?
I mean, you can definitely tell the one area John really wanted to focus on when he came in, Coach Hines, was playing fast and moving the puck quickly out of their zone and up the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And his first couple practices, you can see like a lot of the wingers and centermen, defensemen, they have a lot of predetermined routes. So you know, if the puck goes up this side of the ice, if I'm a winger on the other side of the ice, I'm slashing all the way across the ice. There's no sense in me waiting on the other side because there's not going to be a pass coming across the ice. So what he's done to play fast is he's forced players to skate toward the puck if someone has the puck. So there's mm-hmm. always 10, 15 foot passes. And that makes you look like you're playing faster and you're moving through the neutral zone quicker. When you have a lot of rink wide passes and stuff, that's when a lot of these passes get broke up. And so when you're completing a lot more 15 foot passes, you're seeing a lot less turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
And as you notice, we've played a lot more in the offensive zone.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one tactical area that has really stood out to me. The other one for me, Mike, is Jared Spurgeon, Brodin, and Brock Faber are playing like I'm not going to compare them to Makar and Hughes,
mm-hmm.
but they're playing like them. They're playing like Rovers. Like it's unbelievable to watch.
Right.
Even Jake Middleton and even Goligoski is playing it's almost a little bit reckless.
Yeah.
There was
a play the other night where Brodin centered the puck to Faber at the net.
It was
like from the goal line.
I was watching it from home. I actually had to go back to see if I saw that, but, yeah. So it's a, like right now it's a hair reckless, but I would rather be with our team,
uh-huh.
the way our defensemen skate, Mike, I've always said I would rather be a hair reckless because we have I would put our top three defensemen skating wise against any other top three in the National Hockey League with Brock Faber now in the lineup. Mm-hmm. Anybody, you want to just race around the rink, skate back and forth. Let's line up your three best against our three best. So with them being Rovers in the offensive zone all over the ice, they create so much chaos.
Yeah.
Just being in people's faces, keeping pucks alive. It's been a big reason why we've been able to spend so much time in the offensive zone. And I'm going to get a chance to talk a little bit about it on the air tonight, but that's the one area, the other area that has really stood out to me. And then obviously Mike getting saves. I mean, that's, yeah. that's, I mean, just, it's, it's amazing. Now all of a sudden the puck looks like a beach ball,
right,
to both goalies, not one. They're stopping everything. You know, Marc-Andre Fleury, the first power play for Chicago there the other night, he was unbelievable to keep the puck out of the net. And so that's kind of from a tactical standpoint. And the coaching change thing, Mike, for me has always been an amazing phenomenon from a human spirit situation. People have asked me all the time, like, to try to explain it. And I honestly can't. And like I played 17 years, Mike, I never went through a coaching change. So I don't really know what it feels like to have a coaching change in the middle of the season. But I can tell you there has to be, because hockey players have feelings, obviously everybody does, but, and for the most part, hockey players have big hearts. And I think there's a guilt thing there that's deep inside a human being, a hockey player especially, that there's a guilt thing. I know I would feel that. Like, I feel like I would let the man down. He's out of a job. You know, he's busted his butt. You see him walk in the morning, every morning at 5 a.m. doing his work. So I'm sure there's a guilt part of it too. And that comes out as well.
Yeah. And the players really voice that. You could hear it from guys like Spurgeon and Foligno and Zucchi and all these guys.
Well, even off the record, you would have had more conversations with some of those guys too. And I'm sure you feel it as well too.
I mean, and you know, there's a lot of guys on this team that have never been through coaching changes before. So even the Durs and Duhams, you see them playing so much harder than they were. And you know, Faber the other day is standing up answering questions like this was his fault. And it's just like, dude, you're the least of the reasons why Dean and Bob lost.
And actually, on the broadcast the other day, I thought Ryan Carter brought up a great point. He talked about the guys that are the fourth line guys that had a hat trick, and Brock Faber, guys that are flying around. Not much equity, man. You don't have a lot of equity.
Yeah.
That's an excellent point. And that's a true fact. I mean, you're playing for your life.
Yeah. John Hines has no idea who these guys are when he comes here. You know, it's the same thing. It's like people are already, you know, the Twitter world all over, like, you know, Ryan Hartman's a fourth line, you know, forward already. And, you know, this contract's going bad and, you know, right off the hop. And instead of looking at this logically, you know, Ryan Hartman gets suspended. He misses the first two games. John Hines wins both those games. The Foligno, Goudreau, and Maroon line was really good. Ryan's going to have to bide his time. I mean, that's just the way it worked. He's not just going to throw Ryan Hartman up in the lineup when everything's going perfectly.
Well, the coach would be sending a not a very good message to the rest of the team.
Exactly.
And you know, and if you ask Ryan, you know, I don't know if you've talked to him, but I mean,
I think Ryan gets it.
Ryan gets it.
Yeah.
He gets it. He's going to have to wait his turn. But when you have to wait your turn, you got to be playing good when that opportunity.
You know, and on the other side of that fact is people are like, when is somebody going to send a message to Johansson? Well, again, it's we're three games into John Hines' career.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what went on here the first 20 games. That's not his problem. His job is the guys in front of him.
Yeah. And let's let this thing breathe a little bit.
You know,
the other thing too, I was thinking about too with having Ryan on the fourth line, Ryan Hartman on the fourth line, you mean great teams have great fourth lines. Mm-hmm. They just do. And to have Ryan Hartman on your fourth line as a 34 goal scorer, Ryan and Connor Dewar struggle on their weak side on the faceoff circle. Mm-hmm. You've got two centermen that can take faceoffs on their strong side.
Right.
So instead of winning on your weak side, you're going to win 30% of your draws. Now you're going to start with the puck 65% of your time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's played out in the last couple of games if you look at the faceoff percentages.
Right.
Now you've got your fourth line on the road. You're not scared to put them in an offensive, defensive zone faceoff because you're probably going to start with the puck.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of coaching things there with the righty lefty thing too, that I'm sure. And I'm sure you're going to talk to him at some point during your podcast. That might be an interesting question.
Another tactical thing. And I want to talk to you about the penalty kill and what you're seeing there. Another tactical thing that we've seen a lot more is Brock Faber and Jonas Brodin out there with the top line. And, you know, I don't know if it felt like at the end of Bob Woods and Dean Evason's time, I don't know if they didn't have a lot of trust in the third pair, but they were starting them in a lot of offensive zone starts with the top line. And I think it really hurt that line's ability getting up and down the ice cleanly because just obviously, I mean, your third pair is not moving the puck as well. They're banging pucks off the boards. They're turning pucks over. And the final straw was that Colorado game where they started the offensive zone draw. Merrill was out there. He turns the puck over. Game-winning goal, and that was all she wrote.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen quite the contrast now. Do you think that's something that – I mean, is that just the way that John coaches? Like, what was your sense on why it felt like the third pair was out against with the top line more than really most teams in the league.
Well, I think
because the analytics do show it. It was the
Listen, what the coaching staff is trying to protect the fifth and sixth guys. If you can start those guys, if you can start your bottom pair the furthest away from your net, then that's going to give you the best chance to keep the puck out of your net. And when you're playing your five and six defensemen with your top players, you're hoping that your best offensive players can keep the puck in the offensive zone.
Right.
Unfortunately, today, in today's game, when you're playing three against five in the offensive zone, because your five and six defensemen, especially when you're losing, Mike, they don't want to take chances.
Yeah.
They ain't jumping, diving down to the front of the net, because if they give up a two-on-one, then they probably aren't going to play the rest of the game. So they're not taking any chances. So now you've got your top line playing three against five, just a matter of time before the other team gets the puck.
Mm-hmm.
So now those three players have had to play against five players, probably busting their ass, dead tired coming into their own zone. Now they come back into the other zone. You got five fresh players playing against three tired players.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you get yourself in trouble. I understand the philosophy of trying to protect certain players at certain times, right, especially when you're on the road. But your best players, the guys that you're paying big money to, they need to look up out of the corner in their own zone and see defensemen at the top that I know if I'm going to give it to them, that there's a good chance I'm going to get it back.
Right.
Or you're going to at least blow down the side and then there's going to be some confusion just enough. Maybe they make a little bit of a mistake through communication. Now all of a sudden I got 10 foot of separation. And it's worked. I mean, I'm sure John went back and looked at, you know, how the coaching staff matched and did different things. This was one thing area that he probably looked at and said, I think I can tweak something.
I see also the rationale, like Dean was a hard match guy with his defense. He always wanted to have Faber and Brodin or Middleton and Spurgeon out against the other team's top lines. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you've got Eriksson Ek going out against those guys, you're probably seeing a lot more of Brodin and Faber with those, you know, with an Ek out there going against McKinnon.
And think about this. So you said like the offensive guy's always in the offensive zone for faceoffs.
Mm-hmm.
The other team is usually going to put their checking guys out on the ice. So,
right.
If you're Bob Woods and Dean Evason, you're thinking, okay, they're not going to play power against power.
Right.
You know, when we're in the offensive zone. So there's all kinds of reasons why I understand reasoning for both.
Yeah. Like,
these guys just weren't playing great.
If you look at that game in particular, it worked from the standpoint that McKinnon and Rantanen didn't do much in that game because Ek just draped himself with Foligno and Goudreau all over him.
They played great,
with Faber. Yep. But then the one time that it just bit him on the game.
And that happens again. Yep. And you're looking at one situation, Mike. Yep. I mean, this is, you know.
Let me, the end of the PK tenure of the old regime felt like they were really searching for answers. It was bizarre. It was like they had these two different, almost like passive and aggressive, schemes, and you never knew which one they were going to go, and it never seemed to make sense. I mean, was that just them grasping at straws? Like, what did you see at the end with the, am I wrong that they had these two different types of?
No, of course.
Yeah. Alignments.
No, they did change up their systems, and changing up systems in season's really difficult.
Yeah.
You know, you're trying to learn. Now, when you change up systems, the other three players might have different tendencies in different systems.
Right.
Now I'm trying to learn, if I'm playing with Connor Dewar, how is he going to handle this situation? Should I shade a hair this way? Now I'm trying to learn in an NHL game with the best players on the ice. So anytime you go into a season and you have to try to change your systems, especially on special teams, to try to get it right, makes it very, very difficult. The Wild couldn't get a save, Mike. I'm just going to call it like it is. It really affected. I know this because I killed penalties. I know the psyche of a penalty killer, and those players take a ton of pride in being great penalty killers. It affects your life. Like, I'm telling you guys care. They're going home. They're maybe grumpy with their kids. Like, it changes everything. And then you give up you've given up three power play goals the previous game. Now you're into a game again and first shots in the net. It affects the rest of your game. It just, I don't care what anybody says, it does. And it was affecting their game. When the Wild went back to the, Mike, when they went back to the diamond and kind of packing it in, I love that.
Yeah,
I love that. Everybody
against Ottawa, it was perfect.
Yeah,
Ottawa didn't know what to do.
And again, I think they've stayed with that system. Yeah. I'm seeing a lot more of the same things where guys are, you're seeing guys more in shooting lanes and shutting off passing lanes through the middle, allowing your goaltender hopefully to make the first save. And if we're going to pack it in, there ain't going to be a second shot. It's going to be a save and it's going to be down the ice.
Right.
That's what we're going to trade off from not being so aggressive everywhere else.
Yeah.
And if you're going to play the diamond like the Wild have, you got to block shots, man. And the best penalty killing teams around the league, I don't care. I watch it, Mike. I watch it every year. The last four teams that are fighting for a Stanley Cup, I just shake my head. I sit on my couch and I'm like, I cannot believe how dedicated these guys are. It's amazing to watch. I say it every year. And I still feel the same way.
Yeah.
You're playing against the best players in the world. If you don't have players on your team willing to lay it on the line and block shots, you will not be a good penalty killing team.
That Detroit game is what scared the heck out of me watching that. Not only did they score a couple of power play goals, but it felt like Gostisbehere was taking, you know, one-timers from 25 feet out. I mean, he was just stepped right into their passive penalty kill, and it was like helter-skelter for a while. And actually, I mean, Gus made some good saves until he just couldn't. You know, one goal off a face-off, the other goal David Perrano.
He didn't have much of a chance on a couple of those on a couple of those plays.
But they are getting saves now. And you know, to your point, at least overall, I mean,
it's better. It's not perfect, Mike. Listen, they've hit a post.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. We didn't get any breaks either. You don't go from a 10th penalty kill in the league and now you're 32nd, and not just 32nd. The team that's 31st is 10% better than you.
Yeah,
that just. They're better than what they were doing. It's just they weren't getting a lot of breaks. So hopefully they start getting a few bounces and continue to build on what they've done through the first three.
10 for 11 tonight or going into tonight's game against Calgary. Let's talk about your old pal Rick Tocchet. You were on his bench in Tampa Bay as his assistant coach. He's now gone to Vancouver and just done a remarkable job. I mean, you look at this team right now. You got Quinn Hughes on top of the league in points. You got, JT Miller doing unbelievable things. Brock Besser scoring goals. Elias Pettersson about to get paid. They got 33 points in 25 games. They're 8-2-1 at home. What has he done to help that team turn it around?
Well, it's been 12, 13 years since I've coached with Rick. And, so that's a long time. And coaching with him, we had a lot of fun. He wasn't one of those guys that wanted his assistant coaches around the rink for 16 hours a day. Like, Walsy, get your work on the PK done. Like, you don't need to go back and watch 10 games. You can watch the last three. So I was ready for my meetings. And he was great to work for because I had a family as well too. So, the guy's he's just a no nonsense guy. Mm-hmm. Like, you know where you stand with him. He's so unafraid of conflict. Like he actually like thrives on it. He enjoys it. Like I remember getting into a couple like back and forth with him just about system stuff. And he wants assistant coaches with ideas. And I have a lot of ideas. So that's why I think we got along so well, is because I would bring things to him that maybe he would never have thought about before. And he wouldn't always agree with me, but at least he'd sit there and think about it or question you or come back the next day and let's sit down and talk about what you're. But we got along great. He really enjoys, Mike. He's a head coach, but he loves going on the ice early with players, and he loves to work with guys that are struggling. Like, right. I just remember Marty St. Louis and Steve Downey, and even Stammer at the beginning is his rookie year, guys that were struggling with their game. He loves to go on the ice early and work on positioning and scoring around the net. If guys aren't scoring, Rick scored, I don't know, he scored 450 goals, something like that.
Right.
He was amazing around the net as far as positioning. And he loves working with
that's because defensemen were scared to get near him.
Well, so. Maybe he had a little bit more room even. Yeah. But it doesn't surprise me that, like, when I see Brock Besser, and I mentioned this to you, I think, a couple of days ago. When I see right-handed players having success with Rick Tocchet, I think back to what he did with Steve Downey. I'm sure you remember that name back in Tampa.
Yeah.
I think one year, I think Tock got him 25 goals one year, all around the net, working with him. Now I see Brock Besser scoring. Kuzmenko's a right-handed shot. So he's one of those guys that he enjoys conflict. He wears his emotions on his sleeve. Like, you don't have to wonder what your coach thinks of how you're playing when you just scan the bench. You got a pretty good idea where you're at. I'm really happy for what he's done. He was a very loyal guy, I can tell you. I'm not going to share all the stories with you. If you have him on your podcast, he might. But the situation that I went through personally in Tampa, though, there, Mike, he showed an amazing amount of loyalty to me, and it's something that I'll never forget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he, by the way, just you mentioning Steve Downey just gave me like the shakes because he was a freaking maniac.
All talk wouldn't have helped with that situation.
Yeah, no, exactly. although it was like later in his career where he became really crazy. You mentioned working with right-handed shots, and obviously you mentioned Besser. Tak was a right-handed shot. Besser, I mean, he's healthy. I think he's stress-free because of, you know, he's no longer having the weight of the world on his shoulder, just thinking about his dad and in pain. But he's leading the league with 17 goals. And how much do you think that is to do with Tak just really working with him, or just the confidence that he's playing with because Tak is showing so much confidence in him?
Well, the two go hand in hand. I'm sure. Mm-hmm. I'm sure at the beginning of the season, Brock come out of the gate playing well, and then when you come out of the gate and you're playing well and you're scoring goals, that's another thing that Rick mm-hmm. was really good at, is recognizing Mike who's going that night. Mm-hmm. You know, and he recognizes stuff really early in games. You know, I think obviously the situation that Brock's had to deal with for many, many years has been weighs on him. It would weigh on anybody to watch your father go through what he went through. But I think just scoring early in the season for Brock brings you an amazing amount mm-hmm. of confidence. And when you have confidence in this game, you just feel like you can do anything. And I'm sure Brock's in that kind of a mode right now where he feels like any puck that pops out to me is going in the net. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to miss the net. The goalie's not going to make a great save. He just has that confidence just because of getting off to such a great start. We saw it with Eriksson Ek a couple years ago when he started scoring 20 goals a year. The year he got 19, Mike, I think he had 3 or 4 goals in his first 4 games after mm-hmm. scoring 5 goals a year for like 4 years. We're like, well, what? This is the first round pick that we took just before Brock Besser.
Mm-hmm.
And he's lighting it up. But so, you know, Marco Rossi scored early in the year too.
Yeah.
Confidence, man. It's true. It's an amazing thing. When you score, it breeds a lot of confidence. And, you know, Rick said, I don't know for sure. How much work that he has done with Brock, working on positioning around the net. Cause it seems like a lot of Brock's goals are, kind of off to the side or, you know, I guess they are, right? Most of them are around the net. So, that would be interesting for you to ask that question to Brock.
Yeah.
Because Rick Tak had made his living in the paint. And mm-hmm. it seems like that's where Brock's getting a lot of his goals from.
Yeah. You mentioned Rossi. Rossi's getting a lot of his goals from there. I mean, are you amazed at this kid's courage? I mean, he's an undersized guy, but yeah, he is getting, you know, he is going to where you need to go.
Yeah.
To score goals.
It's, I'm proud of him.
Yeah.
I'm really proud of him. The kid's been through a lot. I watch rookies come into this league. All us guys that were broadcasters, we were all rookies. We know what it feels like to come into the league. It's a hard league. And I think it's even harder now to come mm-hmm. into the league because the pace is just so fast. You know, with what he had to deal with his heart condition, you know, last year, 1 assist in 19 games. Can he play? He had some injury issues down in the American Hockey League. Kid's been through a lot. His skating definitely has improved. There's no doubt about it. And I also do think, Mike, that him staying here and training with NHL players this summer
mm-hmm.
was an important factor in him getting to where he is right now. So when he goes back and trains in Austria, he's not training with NHL players.
Right.
He doesn't, in his mind, Mike, he doesn't know if he's training hard enough.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it's a mental thing. It's a mental thing. Now you stay over here and you bust your ass with the guys you're playing with
mm-hmm.
and you know you're stronger than this guy and that guy and you've
right.
trained harder. And that breeds a lot of confidence. Mm-hmm. It really, really does. But the other thing I love too, Mike, is when you're a young player and you're playing with two superstars, mm-hmm. and I watch this very, very closely, like deferring to Kirill and Zucchi and giving them mm-hmm. the puck. He's not.
Yeah.
He wants to score.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to be the man. And I love that about him because that's a quality you don't always get in young guys playing with top guys. And he has that. And that's going to make him a more dangerous player as we move through the year.
Last question before we get to some Twitter questions for you. I wanted to ask you about Zuccarello. You know, you just brought him up. This guy, he's got an active 7-game assist streak, active 11-game home point streak, an active 9-game overall point streak in a league where allegedly it's a young man's league. We're seeing other guys like, you know, Crosby still thrive, Pavelski still thrive. And then this guy at 36 years old, just doing some remarkable things. He's on pace for 97 points. For a guy that's never been the greatest skater. I mean, you know, Marty St. Louis said it last year. His legs have never been the fastest, but his brain sure is. What do you see with his game and why he just keeps getting better with age?
Well, I chuckle when I hear people say that he's not a great skater. Mm-hmm. Mike, he might be our fastest skater from point A to point B in a 30 foot race. Mm-hmm. He's our fastest skater. Mm-hmm. He's so explosive. There are times when he'll chip a puck past the defenseman, yeah, and I'll watch him and it looked like someone hit the fast forward button. Mm-hmm. When I see that in my mind, no one can tell me he's not a great skater. Right. Now, he's not a burner. You're not going to see him like McKinnon flying through the neutral zone. He's mm-hmm. not that type of skater, but he's an explosive skater. He's a different type of skater. Mm-hmm. So I disagree with Marty St. Louis. Obviously, he's a very heady and smart player. We're going to have a chart here tonight that we're going to show everybody. I think it's the amount of 100-point scorers in the National Hockey League history with guys that have been 36 years and older. There's only two guys that have got to 100 points. One guy's name's Mark
Gordie
Howe, and the other one is Joe Sakic. Uh-huh. And I think Wayne Gretzky got to 97.
Yeah.
And his name is like right up near the top. I mean, obviously, we've got 60 games to go, a long way to go, but to see what he's doing is amazing. And I'm actually probably going to bring it up on the broadcast here tonight. Kirill and Zuki, Mike, the last three games.
Yeah.
They've been playing under 20 minutes, mm-hmm. more quality minutes, not yes. quantity minutes. And, you know, everyone's been talking about Kirill's injury mm-hmm. and different things like that. I've never been a big fan of any forward in the NHL with the pace of the games today, playing over 20 minutes a game. I've never been a big fan. More injuries come along. And I think you just play, you make a lot of mistakes from the 40-second mark to the 60-second mark. If you can stay on the ice for 45 seconds, your coach will get you back out there. He's playing more quality minutes, yeah. and I think that's a big reason.
Well, that was, if you look at the shift lengths, average shift lengths in the league, I mean, there's Boldy, Zuccarello, and Kaprizov were, I think, top five.
I saw that.
Yeah, graphic. And that is not a good thing. You know, that means they're overextending their shifts and things like that. I think that they've been kind of let get off the ice. Save it for the next shift. And so I think it's pretty good. And you're seeing the other thing here is we're seeing more even minutes with the power play now. We even saw that at the end with Dean. I think they're trying to, get them off the ice a little more.
Yeah. And it's difficult, especially at 36 years old. I mean, Kirill has got the silly gene. He's got the extra chromosome. He's amazing. Sometimes I watch Kirill and I'll look down at my monitor and he'll pick up a puck in the neutral zone. And he's been on the ice for 56 seconds. And right. I'm like, well, he's just going to chip this in. And he actually will blow by somebody. And I'll be like I'll be in a commercial break with LePant. And I'll say, I cannot believe what I just saw. Like, he just blew by that defenseman. And he'd been on the ice for 57 seconds. But when you're 36 years old, it's harder to recover from long, long shifts.
Adina guy asked, does Wes have any interest in going back to the NHL as a coach?
Whatever the number, less than zero. Yeah. Less than zero.
Has that changed over time? Like after Tampa, did you like itching to get back?
Yeah, no. I really enjoyed my time in Tampa, working with, being assistant coach there, working with Stamkos and Victor Hedman were both young players at that time. And it's crazy to think Hedman just played his 1,000th game, but, I really did enjoy my time, but the amount of time and hours that you spend at the rink away from your family, it is really a big commitment. And, mm-hmm. With me having our youngest of five is a first year Bantam, I get a chance to still coach his team. When he's done high school, who knows, Mike? I've actually had some opportunities to potentially coach some high school teams around mm-hmm. the Twin Cities. That might be something that might intrigue me, mm-hmm. coaching a boys' high school program and trying to build something.
That's awesome.
So we'll see where that goes.
MJ, Mary asked, does he still skate, play hockey, even with his kids? Is he still super picky about his skates? That was still always the greatest West Wall stories. We'd be out there.
I'm going to cut you off. Yeah, right now.
Like an hour after the game, we'd be in the press box writing there with Wes in his warm up suit, just skating around.
Well, that was probably because we had a game the next night, and I wanted to make sure I had my edges perfect, so I didn't have to come to the rink at 8 a.m. so I could get a good night's sleep. But I'm sure, yeah, you guys used to yell at me from the press box and give me a hard time. But I was more concerned. What was her name again?
Mary asked that question.
Yeah, Mary. I've sharpened my skates, I think, three times in the last like 14 years. So no, I don't, I still wear the same pair of skates.
The other, you've done podcasts with me before, so I'm sure we've told the story. The other great Wes Wall story is when, you were after a game one night on the treadmill and Jock walked through, saw James Shepherd on the ground watching TV, eating ice cream. He went back, said to Mario, was like, this is just, I can't let this go. I got to go out there. And then he like, apparently, did this happen right in front of you? He confronted James.
It didn't happen in front of me. No, okay. But I heard about it later. I think one of the assistants came up or something.
You know, veteran on the,
I wasn't the only guy on the treadmill all the time. There was other guys too, but I just probably happened to be on the treadmill that day. I was probably on the treadmill cause I got benched and only played 12 minutes that game. That was probably why.
Billy Wild fan asks, Billy G Wild fan. I don't think this is really Garen though. What was the biggest transition for him going into the booth?
Going into the booth, well, a lot more preparation, I think, going into the booth, and you know, a lot
having
of times
to deal with Stroh in your ear.
Yeah, no, that's the best part. Stroh's makes my life easy. Just the amount of preparation. A lot of times, I'll look down at all the notes, all the work that I put in, and you know, I'll look down. I use like 10% of the stuff that I had prepared for. And the problem is you just don't know what 10% you're going to use. And, so a lot more preparation going into the booth for sure. You know, not doing like I do about 20 games during the season and maybe, about 30 pre and post. It's hard to get into a routine, you know, like for instance, tonight I'm doing the game. I haven't done a game in like two, 3 weeks. It takes almost a half a game before I start to feel comfortable again.
Yeah, and, that's crazy.
It's really hard. Yeah. And the bullets are flying like right away. Like there's no getting around. And it's just like a hockey player, Mike. You know, some nights you're better than others. You know, I do really try hard to be good and be prepared. And some nights you feel like the English language just flows. And then other nights you walk out of the booth, you're like, what the hell just happened? But I enjoy the people I work with. Anthony LaPanta is great. You might want to edit that, but he's fun to work with. He's always prepared. John Stroh, our in-game producer, is great. Kartz has been great to work with too. And so it's a good group. And
plus awesome stage manager and sound guy in Minnesota, right?
That's
Hodrim,
right.
And John Warner.
Those guys are solid. They're solid.
A couple more for you, because I know you got your conference call to get ready for the game tonight. Name can't be blank. I always love this guy's Twitter name.
Name can't be
blank.
Yeah,
because you have to put a name there, so he just writes name can't be blank instead
solid.
Of Wes.
That's
you
solid.
Know. He goes, does he see more positions in or around hockey having a soft requirement for prior playing experience at the NHL, AHL level? GMs who are former players, is this good or bad, and does it block out others who are otherwise qualified for the job? So, so...
Cole's notes for that one. How do you...
For prior playing experience at the NHL, AHL level. So I think he's basically saying that GMs who have to be former players, is that blocking out? Like, you know, in baseball, you see a lot of like, maybe didn't have playing experience and things like that. Well, I mean, I think GMs, like Chris McFarland never played in the game, like NHL level, Bill Zito.
Well, you're getting a lot more analytical people that are, I mean, I think that started with baseball, right? Where you're starting to get analytical people, kind of moving their way up the ladder in baseball, and, analytics is starting to play a bigger role in hockey for sure. So I'm sure there's a lot more of that now. And I honestly don't know how that's going to progress as we move through the next few years.
Mike Samsonite asks, I remember his first appearance on FSN Wild pregame. He was nervous. How did he overcome the broadcast nerves? Remember Darby when he first started doing TV? Talk about nerves.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I should have been fired after my first year. I look back at some of that stuff. I mean, do you remember we used to do the instructionals on the ice?
Yeah.
Like the first time I ever went on the air, I was on with Jenny Taft. You remember? She's kind of moved on to bigger and better things.
She's
a sweetheart, but I'm doing working on two-on-ones with Jenny Taft, and PA brings this up all the time. The first time I was ever on the ice, I went to turn, and I wasn't even nervous. I went to turn and I fell and slipped on something. And this is live television, right? And I hit my elbow on the ground, but I popped up so fast, like nothing had happened. But my elbow was swollen for like a week. So PA brings that to my attention like once every 2 years or so about the first time I was ever on the air. But it's taken time to get comfortable. Whether you're doing pre and post or you're in the booth, Anthony or Mike, you always get nerves. You just always do. And that's actually the one part that I enjoy. It's kind of like being a hockey player. When the light comes on, it's time to perform. And some nights better than others, but it's obviously much easier when the Wild are winning.
Mariah Stark asks, he was the first Wild player I ever met when I was a kid, and he was so kind. I'll never forget it. What did he miss most about playing in the NHL? What does he miss most about playing in the NHL?
Oh, I don't mind. I kind of miss the paychecks every 2 weeks. that's kind of right up there. But you know what one of my favorite parts of playing in the NHL was, Mike? Was going on the road.
Yeah.
And winning on the road.
Yeah.
One of my favorite parts of being in the NHL was that 15 minutes after you walk in the locker room, till guys like you walked into the locker room, we had a chance to jump around and just music and act like little 10-year-old kids. Yeah. And I
and now it's 5 minutes.
Now, is it five now? Yeah, oh, man. We used to blow it out. We used to blow it out. The coaches, and Jock never came in and talked to the, whether we won or lost, he never talked. So it was our time. And especially when we beat good teams, that was one thing that I really, really miss. Cause it just, you just look around the room and see everybody acting like kids.
Holden asks, if Wes could jump on a line with two Wild players from any time, who would he like to center?
Oh my goodness. Well, Kirill would obviously Kirill Kaprizov and Marian Gaborik, but, I'd love to center those two guys, but I don't think those guys would probably want to work, you know, under Jock. I wasn't really allowed to go very deep into the offensive zone. Kirill and Marian Gaborik, if they played one game with me, if Jock was the coach, because I'd always stay in the high slot and wouldn't work in, they would knock on Jock's door in like 5 seconds and go, can we get this guy off our line? Or coach, can you allow him to get involved in the cycle? And don't worry, trust me, I was a scorer in junior. I wanted to get involved in the cycle, but I had played over in Switzerland, played 300 games in the minor. I remember coming back to Gabby on the bench all the time and saying, listen, Gabby, I'm 30 years old. You're 18. Don't tell me where I should be playing. Like, I remember having those conversations with him because he wanted me to get, I knew how I needed to play for this specific coach to stay in the National Hockey League. And I was smart enough to understand that when I was 30 years old.
Yeah. Two final questions that must be from people that know you. Ryan asks, what's your best round at Prestwick?
Probably maybe a 73, 74. Never broken par at Prestwick, but come close a couple times.
Nice. And this person must work at Dairy Queen. What's Wall's 3737's go-to Dairy Queen order? Do you go with Dairy Queen
on that? Oh, my goodness. Well, the one in Woodbury there, that's one of the busiest ones I've heard in the state. They know me by name now. A lot of times I'll just go through the drive-through and they'll go, hey, Mr. Walls, how you doing? You want your regular? I'm a medium Blizzard Heath guy. That's my go-to.
Okay.
And I didn't eat much ice cream when I played. I very rarely ate. But after I retired, I made up for a lot of lost years of eating ice cream. So they know me pretty well over there at Dairy Queen.
That's so funny. This person's a Zamboni driver too. So I don't know if you know who this person
no,
is.
No, I don't spend a lot of time.
She definitely knows that you go to Dairy Queen a lot.
Oh, yeah. So. Okay.
Well, hey, Wes, a lot of fun. It's nice to see this team winning again and having some positive things to talk about. It was getting pretty dreadful.
No, I know. And this is a big trip. Hopefully we can keep some momentum going here.
I knew last night that things have changed. Like before, like the first couple road trips when this team was losing, it's like if I saw a player away from the ice, they were just like, oh, get me away from
they're run, like
yesterday LaPanta and I went over to the Cactus Club, and he had in one corner he had the Deweys, Brock Faber and Boldy, and then the other corner you had Hartman, Maroon, and Merrill. And as they were all leaving, they came up, all of them talked to us.
Hey, Roos, how's it going?
Suddenly, like we're like, suddenly they're not hiding from me. And
hey, I'll be available for an interview if you need one.
Exactly. So, well, hey, thanks, Wes. As always, really appreciate it. And here's a word from one of our sponsors.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
My thanks to Wes Walls for joining this week's edition of Straight from the Source. Really appreciate Wes anytime he can come on to this podcast, especially in his hometown of Calgary, where he's got many things to do besides joining this podcast. The Athletic Hockey Show is published five times a week with our hosts, Ian Mendez, Julie McKenzie, Haley Salvian, Sean Gentile, Max Boltman, and Corey Proman, with contributions from our writers, including Mark Lazarus, Jesse Granger, Down Goes Brown, Shayna Goldman, and myself. In fact, on the Tuesday show with Ian and Julian, I get a guest a week for 15 or 20 minutes. This week's guest, Darren Pang, the Chicago Blackhawks color analyst and TNT color analyst, and everybody loves Panger. Find episodes on the Athletic Podcast Network and wherever you download your podcasts. You can also subscribe to the Athletic NHL's YouTube channel at youtube.com/@TheAthleticHockeyShow. Again, that's youtube.com/@TheAthleticHockeyShow. That's the at symbol, by the way. A new subscription to The Athletic makes a great Christmas present, or Hanukkah present, or whatever you celebrate. You can get a one-year subscription for $19.99 a year, or a two-year subscription for $39.99. Offer is available until January 1st, 2024 by going to theathletic.com/giftsale. This is Michael Russo from Straight from the Source. We'll be back next week.